Welcome to Book Talk. I'm Sasha DeBoyle, and today we're going to be talking about S, the mind-bending, multi-layered new novel from J.J. Abrams and Doug Dorst. S has been hailed as a brand new reading experience and a new way to engage reading audiences. The story encompasses the final novel of fictional author V.M. Straka and the relationship that unfolds between two people who write to each other in the book's pages. Filled with paraphernalia related to the author's mysterious origins, the book is a masterclass in intrigue and a beautiful piece of publishing. Here to help me decide if the book delivers on its gorgeous packaging are freelance writer and books blogger Nicola Balkind and the Fruit Market Gallery's enterprise manager Ian Morrison. You can't really ignore that the book is a beautiful piece of print. Like, it really shows what you can still do with a physical book today. Do you think that the story matched the kind of gorgeousness of the book itself?
Well, firstly, I kind of like that interplay between old and new. I feel like it was quite like a digital approach to books, and it wasn't like really pretentiously putting it out there as like this lovely thing, and it's obviously a great artifact. I think for me it didn't really live up to that entirely. I liked that there was like the kind of three concurrent strands, so as long as like one of those things takes your interest, then you can kind of stick with it. But overall there were kind of areas where I found my interest was quite patchy, or I wasn't entirely buying into it.
Yeah, I guess I feel pretty similarly, although I'm a bit of a plot junkie, so once I got at the first chapter was hard because I hadn't really worked out how to read it, but then I started to kind of enjoy the kind of convolutions and like sort of the plot was keeping me going. But in terms of how it looks, I mean, like you said, the digital thing, there's definitely some sort of back formation from the internet there. I felt almost like it was making physical hyperlinks between different places. In a way, if it was digital, sort of would have been a lot easier. I'd be intrigued to see the ebook version, because apparently there is one. I'm kind of wondering.
Yeah, I think it links to each of those different kind of artifacts. But I feel like I could have lived without like all but one or two of them. I really enjoyed like the personal letters that they left in there.
Yeah.
And I liked that it was all different print styles and just like kind of tactile nature of that. But I was kind of like, I don't know how much they're actually adding to the experience.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it must have cost a fortune to make. That's one thing I thought, was if this was a movie, you know, thinking about J.J. Abrams, I suppose this would be like a blockbuster in that, like, you know, there's a huge budget, but it's a case of whether or not the content is worth it. I got more and more convinced as it went on. I was quite resistant to it at first. I remember thinking, oh, well, that's a funny word choice for a book that was meant to be published in 1947 or whatever it was. Like, I think the tosspot comes in at one point or something, and I was like, really? I mean, maybe that is a word from the 40s, but yeah, as it went on, I kind of just kind of got sort of carried along with the fun of it, I suppose.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, I definitely, when I first started, I was looking for excuses to pick it to shreds. I was like, don't like that guy, that's weird. Yeah, that doesn't make sense. But by the end of it, I think I had been thinking a lot about, you know, whether the plot is really all that you should be thinking about with regards to a book like this, because it is a new reading experience. And actually, I really enjoyed like the sort of ephemera that's in the book, and I really enjoyed the different aspect that the different characters and the like extra mystery level brought to it. And I think the only thing that left me sort of a bit wanting with regards to it was the fact that so many of them were red herrings.
Yeah, I definitely felt like there were bits missing that I really wanted to see, like you mentioned.
Yeah. I mean, what I found was that, you know how you're saying there's all these codes and red herrings and things, I sort of found that rather than trying to solve things for myself, I was just sort of waiting for them to catch me up. So I'd read as far as I could in the classic text that, you know, all this other story about Eric and Jen is meant to be marginalia for. And then it got to the point where I realized that I needed to then go back and read all the footnotes.
So did you find the structure of the book a challenge for reading?
I mean, it's definitely a challenge. I don't think anyone would say that it was a simple, straightforward process. Yeah, I mean, like I say, the first chapter I found really hard just trying to work out what I was doing. Eventually, I largely settled on reading a chapter or two chapters and then reading the footnotes, because it seemed that even though it wasn't strictly chronological, you know, because obviously some of the marginalia, the different colours are used to say something was written, you know, earlier or later, it sort of is broadly chronological, I think, in that if you sort of work through it combing from the start to the end, you sort of are roughly following, like the main focus is sort of moving forward.
I think they spent a lot of time planning for that to work. There are like a couple of different strands of handwriting conversations between Jen and Eric, the two main characters, and
in the margins,
they all sort of reach a conclusion-ish to the end. So you're going through each single one of them and they sort of kind of overlap and take over from each other, but actually they each have quite a traditional arc. And I was like, would that actually have happened if you were writing to each other in a book? And I spent a lot of time thinking about that and whether it was feasible.
Yeah, I found towards the end there weren't that many from like the first set of handwriting with Jen in the blue and Eric in the black. At different points, different strands were more interesting than others, but I wasn't entirely convinced by the way that they then played out, because there's a point where I think it was like the red handwriting comes in and it's like really dramatic and it's like totally way dramatic. In the future and oh my, what's going to happen? And then it didn't really deliver on that promise after that. I agree.
There's like an intrigue level going on there at one point where there's, you know, a bit of mystery and, you know, there are fires and you're just like, what's going to happen? And no one, nobody explains it. Mm-hmm. Mm, completely vague.
I'm glad you said that, because I was just worried that that was me missing something, but I felt like I hadn't quite... I kind of assumed that at the end the handwriting would then link into the beginning of the next colour, but it doesn't seem quite as straightforward as that, does it?
No, it wasn't, but I did find that I was kind of jumping around and trying to find the earlier strands first. I did much the same as you. I read through like the main chapter and then went back for the notes, and I found that I was always wanting to go back to the notes because I didn't find like the main plot that compelling, and it's just not, it's not really the type of story that I would normally read, I think, and they kind of mystery element of it was sort of interesting to me, but what was more interesting for me was the actual interplay between those two characters and the stories that develops in their backstory and the kind of love story that grows out of that.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose maybe that there's a question, but whether each of the elements is strong enough on its own, it's like, is the book enough of a good book to be theoretically a classic in the fictional world of S, like, something that those people read? Is the story between Eric and Jen good enough to stand up on its own? Is it interesting enough? Or is it just simply okay that it just is everything coming together?
Yeah, and I guess that was my thought at the end, was like, does it have to be? Because I kept thinking, this novel, does it stand up on its own? Does it stand up on its own?
I kind of admired its ambition in that way more than I enjoyed any individual strand of the story.
Yeah.
And I think, like, as much as I liked the love story, it was a little bit trite and a wee bit obvious, and you kind of knew that it was going to work out and that sort of thing.
And I enjoyed like the way that the main text was also this coded discussion between FXC and Straka, the fictional author within it. I thought that nicely paralleled the way that Jen and Eric were using it as a means of communication.
And as well as a means of communication, I mean, in the novel, you've got S, who remembers nothing about his life and is having to create an identity from things. Mm. You've got FXC, who's trying to create coded messages to sort of get through to Straka, and then you've got Jen and Eric, who are actually really, because they haven't met each other, creating identities of who they are and presenting like their best possible self to each other through the pages of this book.
Mm-hmm. And she talks about that as well, about like that experience that she had, that where it was like, I can completely invent who I am, and you kind of, she actually has invented who she is to a certain extent as well, and so that was an interesting interplay. But I felt like I did want to see behind, like, the curtain of the book, because you know that they're meeting up and you know there's other things going on, and it's like very cute messages after that point. I felt like it lost a bit of the depth, but I could see what they were doing with it, because obviously you wouldn't have to share like really deep insights with each other once you're actually together.
I mean, it's that thing, isn't it? It's like the Blair Witch Project thing. Like, how do you convince people that they would have kept filming or they would have kept writing? And
I think for probably, I guess it does pay off in that sense though, because why would you keep writing? You would probably keep writing for the sort of nostalgia and the like, you know, sentimentality element, and so your messages would be really cute.
I was okay with it. Like I say, the more and more I went on with it, the more and more I realised that the things that I was looking to criticise weren't necessarily the important things, and it was achieving something in a new way that was actually incredibly virtuosic. And if you're someone who likes puzzles and enjoys books as artifacts and sort of mysterious, you know, maps, if you like, then this one rewards time spent on it, and it'll definitely keep you going for longer than an average book.
Definitely.
I actually did wish that I had more time to go back and read each of the margin bits, like one at a time, in order to kind of see how well that actually comes together as a thing on its own.
And they talk about that, don't they, in their margins? They say things like, oh, I missed this the first time, like at various points.
Oh, there was one line where they said, oh, it's funny looking back about what we thought we knew.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, maybe I don't want to read all that stuff. Maybe it's just all wrong.
I like the way they use, within the course of the book, it to sort of tell a bit more about themselves. They would use like random phrases from the book. So it would be like, you know, he walked down a street that looked a little Moroccan, and then she talks about a Moroccan restaurant that she likes. And like, they use the book to tell little bits of their lives. I thought that was quite sweet. It actually really made me want to go and find someone to be like a book pen pal with and to pick a book.
That's quite a fun idea.
In the ebook version, you actually have the option to read it with the marginalia or without, or with certain levels. So you can read, like, you can read them chronologically. So you can read like the blue and the black writing together, and then you can add in the orange and the green and then the purple and the red writing. So yeah, you can actually go back and do some really in-depth reading of it. It's funny because I thought as a book, I was like, well, this is proof that ebooks will never match the reading. And then someone explained that to me and I was like, oh, right, never mind.
There's definitely a lot of books that are trying to do that multimedia element. There was that book that I've not read yet, but it was called Night Film by Marcia Pessl. And that had kind of like images and links, and that was like a murder mystery. But my friend that said that she'd read it said that it just seemed very obvious to her. She didn't feel like it was very well done, but I know that a lot of other people have really enjoyed it. So I think it's one of those things that there was a book a few years ago called Level 26, I think. And I remember I interviewed the author at like Comic-Con, and it was like they had just like hyperlinks, but that was like now seems like a very crude way of doing it, where I think there's definitely lots of attempts going on, and this is probably the best one I've seen so far.
Definitely. It really is, you know, on a fundamental level, it might not be, you know, totally avant-garde and literary in what it's doing, but it is changing what the novel can do. And whenever you change what the novel can do, you're never going to achieve it in a particularly graceful way. Like if you look at the books that, you know, forefronted the development of the novel as a form, like, you know, in the 18th century, they're not great novels. You know, they're clunky and they don't flow very well, or they were episodic, so they take bloody ages. So in this same vein, while we're starting to work out what a multimedia novel could look like, the core text isn't going to be perfect. The marginalia is going to be a bit twee sometimes, but I think that's okay.
And it's probably good news for the future of print. I mean, you know, we're sitting here with the book on the table in front of us, and like it's kind of like a way that makes it seem less like an either or, more of a both and.
In a completely like materialistic vein, I don't think I've ever wanted a book more.
No,
like I saw it and I was like, this thing is beautiful. Like I want to own this. And I don't buy books anymore. Like I buy a book secondhand. I'm not possessive over books. And this one, I was like, have to have it.
And a few people that I work with had said that they'd seen it in the shop, but they were really excited to get to see inside it. Because of course you can't, because of the nature of it, you can't flick through it in a shop because there's so much insert.
Which
know,
I think is part of it as well. Obviously the book is completely littered with footnotes from the translator, FX Caldera, to the reader, but they contain a series of hidden messages to Straka. What did you think of the codes? Did you think they were believable, like that Eric and Jen would have actually found them, or did you think that it was just sort of planted in there?
At the beginning I just found the footnotes like so insufferable, because they're written as this like academic, like I know Straka better than anyone kind of voice, and you do have them like kind of slagging off the translator until they get deeper into the book, and then they kind of start to like what's happening. And I think I felt the same way. It was more I was led by their reactions to it rather than like the actual notes.
I read in an interview online with Doug Dorst that he does exist, which is exciting. You know, they don't find the answers to the codes, they don't crack the code in every chapter, and he said that they had been left unsolved, which made me think that they actually are in there. And then I got really paranoid and excited and wanted to go back and crack the codes. Not that I'm any good at code breaking, but isn't that cool?
Yeah. I'm sure you're right. I'm sure they probably are. There's the Radio Straka, which you told me about last night, so I had a quick look at it. And in that, the way that you can put comments on it makes me think that they're leaving room for other people to come in and add to the mythical realm of this, you know, whole caboodle. I mean, it has got the potential to become quite a cult.
I think so.
Object,
there is a code wheel comes with the book. So
yeah,
there
I
is
no
the opportunity to decipher it. I
just
kept
rolling it in my book because it's round.
I think there was one word that I was like, oh, that's a word. Was it? Is it mass or something?
If any readers have any chat about the code wheel and they've figured out how to use it, please let us know in the comments, because we would love to know how to use it.
did you see there was a website that you can just for the wheel?
From what I found online, there's a website called the Eotfos wheel. Is that what it's called? And there's a website called that, and it has like a dossier on all of the different Straka candidates, and it has chat about the wheel, and it has chat about the Santorini man. So a lot of the different things that are discussed vaguely in the marginalia of the book are up there, and I don't know if it's an official website or not. I was trying to figure out if there were. There are a lot of different websites out there. Some of them are unofficial and some of them are official, and it is completely unclear what's what, so they're very exciting. Something that I discovered online is that actually Jen, one of the characters in the book, has a Tumblr, and that she's been posting online in the past week or so. And one of the posts that she's put up is, it looks like the original manuscript of chapter 10 before it's been altered to be added into the book, so without any of the changes. I haven't read through it fully yet.
Because when was the actual release date for the book? I mean, when did it hit the bookshops?
Came out, I think, November, December. It was a pre-Christmas release.
Late last year.
I mean, that's a really interesting marketing strategy, apart from anything else, to just keep the book live and make it into a sort of ongoing series or something.
Yeah, it makes my inner social media nerd very happy. That yeah. Because it's so easy to do badly. And there's a lot of TV shows that have tried it, and I always think like, well, when you go back, then you've just got all this backstory and you're not really in the right place for it. But with this, it's perfect because you finished the book, you've maybe tried to crack some of the codes yourself, and then you can kind of get all that extra information, and it's taken that multimedia stuff to like the next stage, where I would probably like kind of have a nose in on it, but I don't think I would like really dig into it. And actually, the stuff that I found the most interesting when they were talking about the candidates was when they were like joking that it could be Hemingway or something. Real world stuff. I was like, it could totally be Hemingway, and here's why. So that was the stuff that got me going. So maybe there'll be more stuff like that.
So how did you guys feel about the fictional author of the book? I mean, there was a lot of controversy over, you know, who it could be. There are about 8 or 9 different candidates that are kind of batted about over the course of the novel, including one who has confessed, who was, I believe, Somersby,
I think, yeah.
And that is up on YouTube. But then throughout the course of the book, I mean, you know, they keep it very vague and very light touch about who it could actually be.
It was a great lineup of characters that, you know, like everyone from sort of aging Swedish, whatever he was, children's authors to Scottish philosophers. And
he was great.
Like, as a cast, it did what I love in a sort of old Agatha Christie thing, where like you've got some very great fun stereotypes to play with, like depressive Spanish poets and all the rest of it. And it felt like, in a way, like the more up-to-date story really linked in there with those candidates, like the, you know, Moody, the dastardly professor, and Isla Dirks, who's his sort of Eric's competitor. That was a good connection, I thought, between the two worlds, especially when, as you move through, it seems that they're coming closer together.
On a positive note for the world of academic English, they made it sound very, very sexy. And I was like, my degree was not like that. I do not remember like people being like escorted out of the department by security guards for international intrigue about, you know, secret authors. It was just, you know, it was never like that.
Just went trying hard.
But maybe people will read this and they'll be like, yeah, you know, I don't want to be Indiana Jones. I want to go study English. It'd be good.
Yeah, on the subject of like, you know, international intrigues and stuff, I did think there was an echo around the whole kind of like whistleblower controversies and things that are currently happening. There's like an interesting, in as much as like, I thought there were some things in the plot that did do something interesting in terms of current thinking and discourse and like world events. I think it was that sense of who are the enemies and like, you know, loyalties within and to organisations. Like, I think some of that's explored in a quite, you know, obviously rollicking way, but I think it's in there.
I rewatched X-Men First Class over the weekend, and it actually reminded me a lot of this in terms of like, you've got a person that is sort of calling all the shots in terms of the power balance and creating all of this evil in the world just for their own like hilarious ends. And you do sort of have that evil with Vivoda in the book. He is like a really classic sort of villain. Like, you don't really get much about his motivations, but he just seems to want to destroy everything.
I think I believe more in Vivoda, who is the fictional character within the fictional narrative, than I did in like Straka, because it's just because it starts at 11, it's like he's an assassin and a spy and this and that. It's like, well, he was also just a novelist.
Yeah, let's just let novelists be exciting in their own right.
Yeah, and I liked that there were so many like footnote references to his other novels and all these things that he's like reused that they're reading into, because we just have absolutely no context ultimately of those things.
Yeah, that was odd. Like, not content with creating one fictional novel at the centrepiece, there was actually 19 fictional novels that were all referenced to Greater and Lesser Degree.
It would also be a potential to continue the story if they decided to. They could find, you know, they could produce some of the other books.
Yeah, this could totally
maybe
run
take
and run.
Different perspectives. I thought it would be interesting to see like almost like a counterpoint to it. So see like Moody and Ilsa's story while they discover something. They could discover something in another book.
I'd want something fresh in that world to sustain that, but I don't quite know what it would be.
I do like that it is a book that kind of keeps on giving, and that you could pour over it for years and years, and really, you know, the story could continue without the book itself. Like, you know, it'll become its own beast, and people will, like, regular people will contribute to the stuff online, as well as, I imagine, Canongate will plant some things, and J.J. Abrams will probably plant some things. And I really like that it'll just sort of continue to grow and change, and that they won't really be able to control what happens to it out there. Like, it's going to become its own thing.
So, I liked how, like, the stuff inside as well, like, it felt like movie props. Like, there's a bit of legal paper, and it was that kind of, like, slightly soft, and it was, like, it was not, like, regulation-sized paper
it's
at
huge,
all.
Isn't it?
It's like a scroll of legal paper.
Was that the yellow one? Yeah, I felt it was like an American size of paper or something.
A4 is actually wider.
It's like those big American legal pads. Yeah, I remember being like, God, why has he written this? And it's huge. It's like 7 pages long.
Yeah. I reckon that it would be a great investment to buy one of these and keep it sealed up and then sell it 50 years in the future.
Yeah, but then you'd never get to play with it.
No, you'd get one for yourself as well. But just like
so if you have 60 quid to spare.
I feel like it's like a pop-up book for adults.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely. And I love pop-up books. Yeah. So to sort of finish up, I mean, would you guys recommend this book to others? Is it something that you think people would enjoy reading?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's enough buzz around it that people are really curious already. I would just sort of say to someone, persevere past the first sort of struggle of trying to work out how to read it, because then it does start to give, mm-hmm. like, quite quickly. It's just like you just have to kind of, like, get over the hurdle of working out what to read in what order, and then once you've just kind of got your sea legs, if that's not too much of a pun, then, yeah, you'll get a lot out of it.
Yeah, definitely. I think going into it with a wee bit of an action plan is always good. I feel like I probably had a very surface reading of it, and I think people might be surprised, like, how much they really get dragged into it, because I feel like now I might go back and flick through bits and pieces and look at that online stuff and see what more I can get out of it.
Okay, that's all we have time for today. However, our discussion doesn't need to end here. If you have thoughts or comments about S, you can add them on our Book Talk webpage at scottishbooktrust.com, on Twitter at scottishbktrust, or on our Facebook page. Book Talk will be back in 2 weeks with another stellar lineup of interviews from Ryan Van Winkle, and then next month, the Book Talk team will be tackling the winner of the inaugural Folio Prize. Thank you so much to our guests, Ian and Nicola, for coming along today. Thanks for listening, goodbye, and happy reading.